So here we are. It's Purim. We'll get to why it's called Purim. Actually, it's called Purim, but it's actually Purim. But we'll get to that and what it means and what it will be and why it's called that. But this is from the Book of Esther. How many people have studied the Book of Esther? Okay. Excellent. There's a trivia question that you'll always hear about the Book of Esther, and that is, it's the only book in the Bible that doesn't mention God. In the Hebrew scripture, there's no mention of God. And there's some apocryphal parts of the book that were not accepted by the Jews. They were accepted in Alexandria by the Jewish community there because they only found Greek versions. They never found Hebrew versions. When the early councils of the church were deciding what books to be in the canon, they included the apocryphal books, the apocryphal parts of Esther. So if you have a Catholic or an Orthodox Bible, Esther is much longer than if you have a quote, Protestant Bible or a Hebrew scripture. Quite a bit longer, and God is mentioned, but we're not going to dwell on that. So Esther is one of these books where when you read it, you wonder why it's in the Bible. I mean, it's a cute story, and it's a, it's kind of like the Jews are threatened and then they're saved kind of thing. And, every Jewish holiday, as you may have heard the joke, is can be summarized by they tried to kill us, it didn't work, so let's eat. And I did look for, there's a certain kind of cookie. I have to admit, I didn't go to Beechwood to look for it, but I should have. The Hamantaschen, which means Haman's ears. But we're going to get to that. Next year, I'll make the trip. Or maybe, oh, Donna's not here. Maybe she could bake some. But anyway, this is called For Such a Time as This because you're going to see how it's going to apply to us today. You're going to see how it applies to us living in 2020, 2021, 21st century. Do you ever wonder why you're here now? Did you ever wonder why you were born when you were born? Did you ever wonder why you weren't born in 1602 or 1198 or, 428 or? And where you were born, like why weren't you born in China or why weren't you born in Jordan or why weren't you born in Scandinavia somewhere? So you're going to see how this comes about through this book. And Esther, of course, well, there's several main characters. Esther is kind of the heroine of the book. She's the queen. She's a young Jewish woman whose parents die when she's very young, and she's raised by her cousin Mordecai. Okay, Esther is her Persian name, which means star. Her Hebrew name is Hadassah. So if you go to Israel, there's a huge medical facility called Hadassah Hospital in Jerusalem, which is one of the premier medical centers. And I'm not sure why they named it Hadassah, because everywhere else she's called Esther. It's kind of like her Persian name is continued on rather than her Hebrew name. We also have that in the book of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are those kids, are those young men's Babylonian names. But, we're not going to get into all that. So it's the book of Esther, and we're going to briefly summarize the story. If you've never read it, please go home and read it. Please. Last night, all over the Jewish world and in Messianic Jewish places, they were doing what are called Purim parties, Purim plays, where everybody dresses in costume and they reenact the story. And it's really a big celebration, especially for kids. And so when you mention Haman's name, who's the villain of the story, you have to boo or make a disgusting noise. And little kids have these noisemakers that sound like, pfft. And whenever Haman's mentioned, so you could feel free to do that. When Mordecai's mentioned, you're supposed to cheer because he's kind of the hero of the story. So The story is we have King Ahasuerus, who's the Persian emperor, and he controls all the land between India and Ethiopia. Can't remember, it's either 110 or 120 provinces. Okay, so he controls this huge land mass with all kinds of different people, different language group, different cultures, but he's the supreme ruler. And if you know the Persian, you know from the book of Daniel, because I'm sure you've all studied Daniel. I mean, Daniel's an awesome book. You remember the Babylonians took the people to Babylon. And then when they saw the handwriting on the wall, that same night, the Persians came in and conquered Babylon. And it went from being the Babylonian Empire to the Persian Empire. The Persians and their allies, the Medes, had a very important law and custom in their whole culture. And that is, once a law was made, it could never be revoked. So when the king agreed to a law or made a law and signed his name and put his ring into the thing that sealed it, it could never be revoked, no matter what happened. You know, in our Constitution, for example, there was an amendment that brought prohibition. Then there was another amendment that undid prohibition. They could never change their laws. So this vast Persian Empire, many Jews, by this time, the Jews have gone back to Jerusalem. But some stayed. And there have been Jews, Persia, of course, is current day Iran. And until the late 70s, when the Islamic Republic took over and the Ayatollahs were there, there was a very large Jewish community still in Tehran. And they had beautiful old synagogues that went back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. Now there's, I don't think any left, because if you were a Jew and you stayed in Iran when the Ayatollahs took over, that was suicidal. But they were there for many years. When the people went back, books of Nehemiah, Ezra. So when the people went back to the land, the temple's being rebuilt by Zerubbabel and Ezra and that whole crowd. And Nehemiah's working on the walls and Jerusalem's being rebuilt. Some Jews decided to stay where they were, for a variety of reasons. They had businesses. They liked it. They thought Persians were fun to hang out with. I mean, whatever the reason was, there were many Jews who stayed there. So there was a sizable community, which is what leads to this story. A sizable community. So the story is the king, I'll call him the king because Ahasuerus is hard to keep saying over and over again. The king was married to a queen named Vashti. In Persian, that means beautiful. And the king had a woman who was the queen. And then he also had a whole palace full of concubines, like hundreds. You know, Solomon had 700 and had 300 wives. You know, he would meet women walking around and he'd say, "Do I know you from somewhere?" And she would say, "Yeah, we got married 5 years ago." And he'd say, "Oh, yeah, now tell me your name again." So King Ahasuerus was married to Queen Vashti, who was very beautiful. And she was the legitimate queen. And she was banished because at the beginning of the book, he's having this huge party. It's kind of a drunken party, eating, goes on for like 180 days or something. I don't remember it. I don't know. It goes on for 100, you know, more than 100 days of all his princes and nobles. So then he says, "I want to show y'all." I don't know if he said y'all, but he said, "I want to show you all my beautiful wife." So he sent for Vashti to come in to the party, and she refused to go. She refused to go. The ancient commentators, the ancient rabbis who know all the ancient literature, said that he told Vashti to come in, but she wasn't to wear anything but her crown. because he wanted to show off how beautiful she was. So she refused. And so the king was mad. The nobles were mad. The nobles said, you know what? If she rebels against the king, our wives are going to hear, are going to learn from this, and they're going to rebel against us. So the king made a law that could not be revoked, that Vashti was banned. She could no longer come to the palace. And then there was this guy, Mordecai. So he was Esther's uncle, actually was her cousin. And if you read the book, it shows you he was the third generation there. So his grandfather had been carried into Babylon in exile. And then his father was born there, and then he was born there. And Hadassah's parents died, so he raised her. Mordecai means a sweet incense that goes up to God. So, and of course, Hadassah Esther, we already mentioned, is the heroine of the story. So the stage is set because Vashti is banished. And the king puts out a thing, he needs a new queen. So from every province of the 100 and however many there were, 27, did you say? Of all the provinces of his empire, he had guys go out and look for the most beautiful women and brought them to the palace. So Mordecai said, you know, Esther is beautiful. You ought to go. So Esther goes too. And there's a six-month preparation, you can read about it, where they're given cosmetics and perfumes, and they're taught how to live, how to approach the king, how to live in the culture there, all these things. And then they come to the king, and the king basically spends the night with them when they come for their, quote, interview. He spends the night with them, each one of them. And then he decided which one of these women he wanted to be his queen. He probably kept the other ones too, but one was officially the queen. So it took 6 months to prepare for this. So Esther went from being this Jewish girl who was raised in kind of bad circumstances to now she's 6 months, she's going to go in to see the king and may very well become queen, which of course she does. Because she was beautiful. The Bible tells us she's beautiful. It even says she has a great shape. I mean, the Bible describes her pretty vividly. So before we get what happens to her, we have to meet the other character, who is Haman. Right. He's called Haman the Agagite. Now, who has studied Torah? Who has studied the books of 1st and 2nd Samuel? Oh, man, you're killing me. So you remember the Amalekites. The Amalekites were the sworn enemies of Israel. They were always attacking in the wilderness. They were attacking the rear guard. They were having attacks from different ways, and they swore they were going to kill all the Jews. And their king was Agag. And God told the prophet Samuel, Shmuel, that they had to go in and they had to kill every single Amalekite, men, women, children, and their livestock. Every single one. None of them could survive. That was called the ban. And God said, if you don't do this, they're always going to be harassing you. And Samuel didn't do it. I mean, I'm sorry, Saul, who was the king, Shaul, the first king, bad king, wrong tribe, shouldn't have been the leader. Long story short, he kept the animals, he kept some of the people, he didn't kill the king. And Samuel says, what's this bleeding of sheep I hear? You didn't follow what God told you to do then. And Samuel himself personally kills Agag with a sword. He's like 80 years old at the time. So the Amalekites are the sworn enemy of Israel. Haman was descended from King Agag. he was an Amalekite. Most Jewish scholars think that Hitler was an Amalekite and that the head people of the Nazi party were all somehow connected to the Amalekites. Now, for, you know, Hitler and those guys who thought they were Aryans and they were the superior race, they probably wouldn't have wanted to say they were Middle Easterners. But, you know, there's a lot of evidence that Hitler had a Jewish grandparent that he covered up. But, you know, when you have a mind like that, you can't even attempt to analyze it. But anyway, so Haman was an Amalekite. And he hangs around the gate of the palace. He can't go in, but he hangs around the gate because Esther's in there, and he wants to make sure that Esther is all right. When it's Esther's turn to go into the king, she doesn't bring anything with her. She doesn't ask the king for anything. She says, I want to do whatever you want me to do. I'm just going to be loyal to you. So because she was submissive, she didn't ask for anything. And of course, she was beautiful, which always helps. The king picks her as the queen. So Mordecai is outside the gate. His cousin slash niece, whatever you want to call her, is now the queen of Persia. But he hangs around the gate because he wants to see what she's up to and make sure she's all right. They don't have a lot of contact for a very long period of time. That's going to become important later. So Haman, who's the king, he's the king's favorite guy in the government. He made a decree that when he walked by, everybody had to bow. You know, kind of like in Daniel, you know, where the Nebuchadnezzar makes the big image and everybody has to bow and the three boys don't bow. Well, Mordecai didn't bow. So Haman realizes that this guy is a Jew. He's not bowing down like he's supposed to. And he gets furious. And not only does he say, I'm going to kill Mordecai, he says, we're going to kill all the Jews. Echoing back to him being an Amalekite. Is this like too much detail or is that all right? All right. So all the Jews. So he's, you know, insulted by one guy. So he says, they all have to die now. Even if all the other ones bow, we're going to kill them all anyway because this one guy didn't bow. Now, Mordecai is not anybody. He's hanging around at the gate. He's not an official. He's hanging around at the gate. So they draw lots. They cast lots. The Persian word for lot is a pur. So Purim is plural. And that's why where the holiday gets its name, Purim. They cast lots to see what day they're going to kill the Jews. And it comes up to, the Greek translations say, well, I don't know. The Hebrew translations say it was the 12th of the month of Adar, which is in March, which is why we're celebrating now. And the Greek translation says it was the 13th day, but it was during the month of Adar, which corresponds roughly to the beginning to middle of March. Now remember, they're all on a lunar calendar. So Purim varies every year. Sometimes it's in February, sometimes it's in March. So they cast lots, saying in the month of Adar, all the Jews are going to be killed on the same day. On the same day. Not just there in the capital of Shushan, but through the whole empire. How they were going to do this, I don't know. I mean, Hitler couldn't do it with all those gas chambers. But they were going to kill them all on the same day, and the people who did the killing were then allowed to take all their property. Now, he's got to get the king to approve of this. So he goes to the king and says, there's people living here that are different than everybody else. Different than everybody else. Keep that in mind. Are we different than everybody else? We're supposed to be. John and I were just talking about this. We're supposed to be different than everybody else. You know, the Jews weren't supposed to be like the world. We're not supposed to be like the world. So he goes to the king and says, you know, these Jews are different than everybody. They have their own rules. They have their own ways of behavior. They won't bow to me. You know, he could have added, they don't worship our gods. These people are dangerous. The king says, hey, Haman. Boo, right? I don't want to be falling asleep. Says, you go ahead and write the law. He even gives him his ring so he can put the seal on the law. So he says, on this 12th day of Adar, all the Jews are going to be killed through the whole kingdom, and everybody can take their properties. King says, yeah, sounds good. He doesn't know anything about Mordecai because he's just this, you know, guy sitting by the gate. And he doesn't know Esther's a Jew. He's married to her. So pretty interesting. So Haman writes the order. People in the city are confused by this when the proclamation goes out. Because the Jews have been there by this time 100 years. A little more than 100 years. They were like citizens. You know, the Jews had been in Germany for centuries. Centuries. They were such an important part of the society, the economy. The German Jews considered themselves German. You know, if you read about their history, they were very proud to be German. All the great musicians and the scientists, and they felt they were part of Germany. These Jews felt they were part of Persia. The other Persians said, hey, these guys have been here forever. We kind of like them. So the city was confused that all the Jews were going to be killed on the same day. So all the Jews read this proclamation. Now, it would have taken a while to get all around the empire. But when they read the proclamation, of course, there's grief and mourning. This is horrible. What is going to happen? You can imagine the Jews in Germany in the 1930s. You know, every once in a while, there was some more restrictive thing and there was some more horrible law. Till finally, you know, everybody come with us. So there was grief, there was mourning. So they put on sackcloth and ashes and started to pray. Sackcloth and ashes, of course, are the ancient forms of penance. You know, you're praying for something. You know, this is where Ash Wednesday comes from, because, you know, people used to put ashes on their head when they were in mourning, when they were fasting, when they were pleading for God to do something. So they do this through the whole empire, all the Jews. Esther doesn't get what's going on. She's been 6 months in the palace. It doesn't say whether she's seen Mordecai, but she doesn't get what's going on. So she's looking, you know, she looks out the window and she sees some people walking around with sackcloth, ashes on their head. She sees Mordecai and wants to send him some clothes. She doesn't get what's going on. She's living in the palace. You can imagine the queen of this huge empire was probably living pretty nice. Big screen TVs, all kinds of stuff, every possible comfort you can imagine. So Mordecai overhears two guys plotting to kill the king and gets word to Esther, who tells the king, so the king is spared. I forgot to throw, this is earlier than this, but that's going to be important too. So somebody takes the decree in to show Esther. She doesn't really get what's going on. So she looks out and says, you know, I live in the palace. You know, I'm the queen. You know, it's too bad all this is going on. But, you know, I don't live with y'all anymore. I live in the palace. I mean, you know, what am I supposed to do? So Mordecai says, you have to intercede with the king. The only hope is that you are going to intercede with the king. Now, for a variety of reasons, security, customs. Nobody can go into the king's chamber, the king's, you know, throne room, unless the king calls them, or they'll be killed. Anyone who goes into the room is killed. So Esther cannot just, even though she's the queen, she can't just go into the throne room. She hasn't been with the king for 30 days when this happens. Keep that in mind. Esther hasn't seen the king for 30 days. So when Mordecai says, you have to intercede, she's afraid. Because if I just go walking in there to talk to him, he can have me killed. Because he hasn't called me. I haven't even seen him for 30 days. Mordecai gets word to her that she's not going to escape this either. Because she's a Jew. She's not going to escape the persecution. She's not going to escape the death. Someone will figure it out. Okay, keep that in mind. Not going to escape the persecution. So she kind of sobers up and says, Esther 4, verse 13, and Mordecai told them to answer Esther. See, they can't talk one-on-one. To answer Esther, do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. Don't think just because you're in this honored place, you're going to escape this. You're going to be killed too. It's a law. Their law cannot be changed. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. Mordecai says, Esther, you can intervene. You're in the perfect place to intervene. If you choose not to, God will have somebody else save the Jews. Now, why do we know that the Jews were going to be saved? Remember, this is like 500 BC, number one. But even if it was today, and it certainly was during World War II, how do we know the Jews are going to be saved? Well, there's promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. There's promises in Jeremiah that the covenant will never be done away with that God has with the Jews. And of course, the Messiah had to come from them. And he's not going to be born for 500 years. So there's no way every single Jew is going to be killed. Mordecai knows that. By faith, reason, and reading scripture. So if you don't help, God will raise somebody else. You know, God has a plan. I won't pick on anybody, but God has a plan for that guy there. Right? If that guy doesn't do it, God will pick somebody else to do it. He's going to say, you lose. I have this plan for you, but now instead of you doing it, Joe over there is going to do it. So, you know, when you die, you want to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. You don't want to hear, you know, I had a plan for you. You chose not to do it. So I had to have somebody else do it. You don't want to hear that because then you'll stand there going. So you don't do it, somebody else will. But the Jews will be saved one way or another. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. Maybe this is the whole reason you were created, the whole reason you were born where you were born, the whole reason why your parents died and I had to raise you, the whole reason that of all these beautiful women that came to see the king, you got to be the queen. You can have access to him. There's probably a lot of other beautiful young Jewish women in the town who aren't going to have access to the king. Maybe you're here just for this time. Maybe you're here just for 2021. You know, why didn't you die 6 months ago? You're supposed to be here now. Why didn't you die 10 years ago? Because you're supposed to be here now. Born when you're born, you know, Acts chapter 17. Paul tells the people in Athens, Everybody comes from the same blood, Adam and Eve, and everybody's born when they're supposed to be born and is in the place they're supposed to be. You know, you're supposed to be here today, not living in Wyoming. Right? Everybody's where they're supposed to be. Maybe, Esther, you're in the kingdom just because of this. Maybe this is the whole reason you were created. So that kind of sobers her up a little bit. You know, God in his providence sets this whole situation. Like he sets our whole situations. And we don't necessarily know what's going on. Esther didn't know what was going on. You know, the king didn't call her in one day and say, oh, by the way, we're going to kill all the Jews. Just, you know, in case you read about it in the paper or see it on CNN. So you know what's going on. He didn't know she was a Jew at that point. He's not going to confide in her anyway. So we don't always know what's happening. Your whole mission of your whole life might be to talk to one person, to talk to 10 people, to have 100 people do something that you've arranged, and that's the whole point of your whole creation. You're not going to know until you get to heaven, right? We're not going to know. Somebody's going to come. Remember the old song, Thank You? I can't remember the guy's name who sang it. But, you know, somebody's going to come up to you in heaven and say, yeah, I know you don't remember me, but, you know, it was April of 1998. You told me something, and that's why I'm here. Then some other person comes up to you and says, you know, I know you don't remember me, but you came and talked at my church one time, and you said something, and that's why I'm here. And you're going to be going, whoa, I had no idea. Maybe that was the only reason I was supposed to be there. So you don't always know what's happening, but there's always a plan. So the plan can't be, oh yeah, all the Jews are going to be killed. And God can't be in heaven saying, oh boy, now what's going to happen? Because Haman is going to kill all my people. What am I going to do? How many people know God never says that? So Esther or somebody else will do it. The people aren't going to be destroyed. The promises, the covenant, and Messiah had to come. Which, of course, is the big reason. You know, the last promise to Abraham is, through you, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. Not just Israel will be blessed. Not just like you guys who live within 102 miles of here are going to be blessed. Not like, okay, well, the people in this particular... No, all the nations of the world. The Gentiles are going to be blessed because this 75-year-old guy is going to do something. And what he's going to do is give rise to Messiah. He's going to give rise to the physical Jesus of Nazareth, which is why we're here. You know, I don't think anybody here is a Jew since Daniel's not here and Noah's not here. They're the only two actual Jewish believers who come here. But we're all Gentiles, but we're in the kingdom because of the promise to Abraham. Is that cool or what? So what's Esther's response? I'm going to pray and fast. You know, when the book of Nehemiah starts out, Nehemiah hears that Jerusalem is, you know, totally destroyed. He kind of knew it. All the gates are burned down with fire. Everything's really bad. So the first thing he does is he prays and he fasts. He doesn't jump up and say, hey, we got to do something about this. Hey, let me get some guys together and we'll just go over there. No, he prays and fasts for, I think it's 3 days, but I might be wrong. But so Esther prays and fasts. So she's preparing herself. And then she realizes even if she perishes, she has to do this. There are certain things that are more important than your physical life. Right? If we'd have been living in first century Rome, say around the time Peter and Paul both died in the 60s, and Nero's soldiers came and got you, Yeah, okay, he gets a boo too. Yeah, because you know, Haman and Nero, you know, they prefigure Antichrist. They were, you know, Antichrist before. But anyway, you know, they may take you to the Colosseum and say, we got a bunch of hungry lions in there. You renounce Christ, you can go home. You know, we'll even give you a coupon so you can go out to dinner or something. But if you keep up with this nonsense, you're going to be dinner for at least one of those lions. So you got a choice. Some things are more important than your life. You say, I'm not going to deny Christ. Okay, well, come here, lion. We got dinner for you. Not to pick on lions, but right? Because you could renounce Christ, they'll let you live. And you can say, whew. But some things are more important than your life. So she says, and so I will go to the king, which is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. You know, how many times do you hear, like especially in a war situation, where, you know, one person, one guy sacrifices himself to save the rest of the platoon or the rest of the whatever it is. So if I perish, I perish. So providence, the king, well, Haman goes home, talks this over with his wife, and says, we're going to hang Mordecai tomorrow. It has a gallows built that's 50 cubits high. A cubit's from your elbow to the end of your middle finger. 50 cubits high. That's pretty high. It's about 100 feet, more or less, depending how big your arm is. He says, tomorrow morning we're going to hang Mordecai. So that night, providence comes in. The king can't sleep. So he tosses and turns for a while, tries to watch TV. There's nothing good on. So he says to his guys, I want the records. I want the government records. I want to review some stuff. And he finds out, he says, what did we do to honor Mordecai when he saved my life? And the answer is, we didn't do anything. So he says, well, Mordecai has to be honored. Haman's already in the palace because he came to tell the king he's going to hang Mordecai. So the king says to Haman, look, royal robes, big white horse. This hero is going to be paraded around the city. And everybody's going to know he's being honored by the king. Haman thinks it's him. So Haman goes, okay, yeah, that sounds cool. He goes, okay, get all the stuff and go do that to Mordecai the Jew. So Haman is horrified. He's going to kill Mordecai, but now he has to honor Mordecai by taking him around the city and say, this guy saved the king. Yay for him. So then Esther goes into the room and says to the king, says, what do you want? What is it? He puts out the golden scepter, so she's allowed in. She goes, somebody's plotting to kill my people and me. Somebody's plotting to kill all the Jews. The king says, who would do such a thing? He says, Haman. So the king gets furiously mad. This is his favorite guy. He gets furiously mad. He goes out of the room to pull himself together. Haman is pleading with Esther for mercy. And he falls on the couch where she's sitting, just as the king comes in. And the king thinks he's attacking the queen. And if you read that passage, he says, you come into my house while I'm here and you attack the queen, and they take him out and hang him. Right from the same gallows that he built for Mordecai. And Mordecai gets dressed in royal clothes. Yay. And since they can't change the law, he has to make another law that says if the Jews are attacked, they're allowed to defend themselves. Remember when the Holocaust ended and the state of Israel was being formed, One of the things the Jews always said was, never again is this ever going to happen to us. Never again. Other than the Warsaw Ghetto, there was very little armed resistance that the Jews could do against the Nazis, right? Very little. So when the war was over, they said, never again is this going to happen. So the Jews were allowed to defend themselves. Mordecai becomes governor, second in command to the king. Where did we know that from? Exodus. Joseph becomes governor of Egypt. His brothers tried to kill him, you know, because after all, his brothers were the holy guys. You know, Judah, who's Jesus's ancestor, Jesus is from the tribe of Judah. Judah says, hey, let's just throw him in the pit and let him die. And Reuben, who has a sandwich named after him, because he opened the first Jewish deli, said, well, you know, he's our brother. So they sold him into slavery instead of letting him die in the pit, which I guess is better. I mean, it's better. He eventually becomes governor of Egypt, second only to the Pharaoh. So Mordecai becomes governor. And the king gives him all of Haman's property. Isn't that cool? Isn't that cool? All of Haman's property. So Haman's dead. They also kill his 10 sons. Haman has 10 sons. They kill them all. So Esther goes back to the king and says, there's a battle. There's 75,000 Persians were killed by the Jews, including the 10 sons of Haman. The king says to Esther, what else would you like me to do? You can have anything up to half of my kingdom. And she says, I want Haman's 10 sons hung. They were already dead, but they strung them up on gallows so that everybody could see it. 10 sons. So what does this all mean? Why is this book even here? Why is this book even in the Bible? What can we learn something from this? Well, one thing we can learn is providence. There's always a plan for everything, and we're all part of a plan. I mean, Esther gets to be queen, Mordecai's outside, Haman comes to the thing, and Haman gets hung. All these things happen totally against the demonic plan that Haman had set up, who was an Agagite, who was an Amalekite. So divine providence. So here's a possible explanation. Esther symbolizes the church. Now, how does that happen? Well, because she forgot that she was a Jew. The church forgot that she was Jewish. The church is Jewish, but she forgot. She was away from all of that. You know, you go to a synagogue, it'll very closely resemble what goes on inside of most churches. The prayers are the same. I mean, no animals being sacrificed, but some of the rituals are the same. The church does not take the place of Israel. There's not replacement theology. But Esther represents the church. The church forgot that she was Jewish. The first century or so, the church was predominantly Jewish. But then it got more and more Gentile as time went on. The church didn't want to admit she was Jewish. There was always anti-Semitism in Europe and the Middle East. The church didn't want to say she was Jewish. Esther didn't want to say she was Jewish. Mordecai says, you better not tell anybody, or else you'll never get to be queen. So Esther forgot, and she had all this time away from the people. So she forgot that she was Jewish, and she didn't tell anyone. But she had a Jewish background. Does the church have a Jewish background? Absolutely. Our Messiah is Jewish, not was Jewish, is Jewish. You can't believe, until you go to a synagogue, you can't believe how many prayers in, you know, liturgical churches are directly from the synagogue. The only thing is they're not done in Hebrew. The way a church is built. Why does this church look like this? Well, because this is the Holy of Holies. This was where the veil was. This is where the people were. So the holy things were over here. The sinful things were over there. Who can go into the holy place? Just the priest. I mean, all these things carried through, but the church didn't want to admit she was Jewish, but this was the background. Then Esther got other influences, like the church got other influences, Gentile influences. You know, people in Greece and in Rome and in Northern Europe didn't want to say to their church people, hey, you know what? I think we're supposed to be kind of Jewish. But, you know, if you follow Messianic music, if you follow Messianic teaching, you know, starting around like early to mid 90s, all of a sudden, churches started to learn about their Hebrew roots. All of a sudden, you heard Jesus called Yeshua. All of a sudden, you saw pictures, you know, emblems of the 12 tribes. All of a sudden, you saw people studying Torah. All of a sudden, you learned people's Hebrew names. Not everywhere, but it's a growing movement because people wanted to get back to the roots. They are the roots. The Holy Spirit said, these are your roots. The church didn't just come in a vacuum. And it wasn't just a bunch of guys who said, hey, why don't we do it this way? Why don't we build the building like this? So other influences came in. Other experiences came in. So Esther had all these other experiences. Now she was in a position of importance. The church over centuries got to be in a pretty big position of importance. I mean, up to 1054, there was only one church, right? The church controlled everything. Like when a pope or a bishop or some authority figure went and told a king, you got to repent of what you did, the king would fall down in the snow on his knees, crying and repenting, because the church had power. Now they would just laugh at the church. Our leaders just laugh at the church. But anyway, so now she and the church were in positions of importance. Mordecai, yay, he, of course, represents Judaism. He appeals to Esther. Jews commonly appeal to the church. Can you do something for us? In Europe during the war, they wanted somebody to help them. There was only one church person in all of Germany who stood up to Hitler, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and he died in the camp. Everybody else was afraid. Oh, I know they're killing Jews over there, but I better not say anything. I know they're murdering millions of babies over there, but I better not say anything because after all, it's the law. You know how many times when I talk about abortion, people say, well, you know, it's the law. And I say, well, yeah, well, in Nazi Germany, it was the law to kill Jews. Does that say, oh, okay, then I'll just feel free to kill as many Jews as I can, and it's the law. It's the law. So they appeal to the church because of a common heritage. You ever see all these commercials about Fellowship of Christian and Jews and all the churches that go to Israel now, and you know there's so much support for Israel, and Israel's looking for help all the time. Common heritage, our same roots, common scripture. So we support Israel. You know, the church prays and fasts for Israel. We have to do what we can to prevent persecution of the Jews because we have common roots, common causes, and we stand for the same true God. We worship the God of Israel. Islam does not. Hinduism does not. Buddhism does not. I mean, any other religion you can name does not worship the true God of Israel. Christians and Jews do. Allah is not the God of Israel. We'll go to that, into that some other time. So Haman, of course, is the demonic character. Let's kill everybody. Let's kill everybody. It's a woman's right to choose. The Jews are inferior. We're the superior race. If a boy wants to be a girl, that's his choice. We can't interfere with that. It's humanism. It's pride. It's the carnal man. I want to do what I feel like doing. I don't care about laws, and I don't care about authority. I don't care about morals. I want to do what I want to do. That's Haman. The king loosely represents God. Okay, loosely. But he's an authority figure. No one can approach him unless he says, come. The church slash Esther is afraid to go talk to the king. The church is kind of afraid to talk to the king. You know, the church wants to do everything themselves, you know. You have a committee, you have a group of elders, you have a group of whatever you have in your denomination. You know, we don't want to ask God what we should do. We'll have a meeting and we'll decide. We're either afraid or we think it's kind of weird. Nobody does that anymore. I mean, that's like Middle Ages stuff. We don't do that anymore. The church is almost afraid of him. And Esther was away from him for a while. The church has moved away from him. Away from him. We've seen the great falling away that Paul wrote about to the Thessalonians in the 50s AD. We've seen it happen in our lifetime. Everybody here is old enough to know things aren't now like they were 30 years ago, even 20 years ago, 100 years ago. Whew. Been away for a while. The king's asking for the bride. He asks for Vashti. He asks for Esther. He asks for the bride. You know, the whole Bible has a bridal paradigm, right? If you study the Song of Songs. Ooh, we should do that sometime, Monica. Oh, except we'll have to have like an 18-month conference. Pastor Dan could come, and maybe we'll get Mike Bickle. Oh, no, maybe not. So no one can approach the king unless he says, but the king was asking for his bride. Vashti is beautiful, but is a false church. She doesn't do what the king says. She doesn't want to do what the king says. Now, of course, I say he's loosely represents God because this king is a jerk. But it's an authority figure. She doesn't respond to the king, and the king banishes her. Eventually, the false churches are going to be banished. Can I get an amen? You know, it's your judgment when you die. You're not going to want to say to Jesus, hey, I thought that guy on TV told me that when I became a follower, I was going to have a really cool house and I was going to get a lot of money and I was going to have a really cool car. And I had kind of a dumpy house. I had kind of a dumpy car and I never even got a bonus. Like, what's with that? You're not going to want to ask that question. You know, it's like churches being afraid of their tax exempt status. You know what my response to that is? Preach the truth and pay the tax. Take up a couple extra collections, pay the tax. You know, I talked at, you know, our church a couple, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, and there was a guy afterwards who was really mad at me. I won't tell you who it is. But guy was really mad at me. He goes, you can't, you know, tax exempt status, really important, which, you know, people aren't going to give if there's a, but. And I said, well, if the only reason people are giving to you, to your church, is the tax status, that's pathetic, number one. And number two is, do you think when you die, if, you know, if you're a pastor and you're worried about that, do you think when you die, Jesus is going to say, you know, I was really impressed with how you kept your tax-exempt status. You did a terrific job. I mean, you saved thousands of dollars. Wow. No, he's not going to say that. He's going to say, you didn't preach the truth. You didn't tell people about me. That's what you're supposed to be doing. So the king banishes the false church. Esther wants what the king wants, not what she wants. She doesn't want half his kingdom. She just wants her people saved. The church is supposed to be saving people. The church isn't supposed to be preaching prosperity and good times. The church is supposed to be saving people. You never hear that anymore. I was just telling Don and Linda about this friend of ours in New Orleans. You know, you take him to the store and he's stopping people in the aisle. Hey, do you know Jesus loves you? Hey, do you know Jesus died for you? Hey, do you know that? And I'm like, come on, we have to go. Oh, wait a minute. Do you know? But anyway, she seeks his kingdom and pleases him. She had gone away for a month and then she was back. Haman accuses the people before the king. Who's that sound like? Satan, the accuser of the brethren. He accuses the people, he accuses us before the throne night and day. Oh, he says to God, oh, you think Joe over there is following you? Did you see what he did yesterday? You call that a follower? He's pathetic. He's not following you. Then he says to Joe, you're following? Yeah, great follower you are. Remember what you did yesterday? And then you go, oh, great accuser. You got to get rid of these people. They're different. Christians, they are different. We don't fit into the new creed. You know, we say the Nicene Creed, the Apostles' Creed, you know, the ancient creeds of the faith. But now there's a new creed. And if you don't adhere to the new creed, you're ostracized, you're canceled, you're persecuted. The new creed is ugly. We'll get into that. So Mordecai, Judaism, talking to the church. Appeal to the king for us. Appeal to the king. Intercede for your people. You're Jewish too. Intercede for your people because eventually they're also going to come for you. You're not going to survive this. They're going to come for you. Remember the old thing that was many years ago? Say, well, you know, they came for the Jews, but I didn't say anything because I wasn't a Jew. You know, and then they came for the Catholics, and I didn't say anything because I wasn't a Catholic. And then they came for whoever, and then eventually when they came for me, there was nobody else to speak up. They'll come for you next. So Haman, the satanic guy, has to honor the Jews even though he hates them. Satan hates the Jews. Because they're God's people and the Messiah came from them. Hates them. That's why there's been so much anti-Semitism for millennia. And the truth is going to be known. And the honest person who's following is going to be honored, not the satanic person. So that's one possible explanation. So Satan, we know he's the enemy of Christians and Jews and prefigures Antichrist. You know, Hitler was a prefigurement of Antichrist. You know, many of the czars were prefigurements of Antichrist. Many of these, you know, horrible leaders in Europe were prefigurements of Antichrist. Soon we're going to see real Antichrist is going to be here. It's probably not going to be long, but he's a prefigurement. So at Purim, the holiday, you read the scroll in the morning and in the evening. You read the Megillah, which means the scroll, because you need to learn the lesson. Just like, you know, when we do Seder, you tell the story in the first person as if you yourself came out of Egypt. So you have to learn the lesson. And the lesson is that the people, the Jews, and the church are going to be saved. Israel is going to be converted, going to be saved. But God is not going to let us perish. Now, by us, I mean a true church. If you're a false church, well, you may perish like Vashti. But they're going to be protected, the people and the Jews. Now, World War II, I want to say a couple more things. Hitler banned the Book of Esther from the whole nation. It was a criminal offense to have the Book of Esther in your Bible, or to read it, or to say anything. And when they were crafting the final solution, they all realized that if this fails, there's going to be another Purim. Except this time, they're the ones who are going to get hung. So if they're going to kill all the Jews, they better make sure they kill them all. So nobody was allowed to read it. Now, Haman's 10 sons, when they read the scroll, when you get to the part that has the names of Haman's 10 sons, you can look at this for your homework. When the Jews read the scroll, they read the 10 names all in one breath. They read all 10 names without taking a breath because they want to say their names as fast as possible and not give them any kind of honor. Just say the names really fast. In the Hebrew, in the scroll, the 10 sons of Haman, their names are written on a separate, can't call it a page, but a separate page from the rest of the scroll. It would be like having a Bible where on one page, it was just the 10 sons listed. And it says so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so are going to be hung tomorrow. Now, they already were dead, but the Hebrew words that are used for and for tomorrow can mean more than just tomorrow as of Saturday, February 27th. It can mean like future tomorrows. So the 10 sons are going to be hung in a future tomorrow. So World War II ends. There's the trials at Nuremberg, right? You ever see the old movie, what's it called? Justice at Nuremberg or no? Something like that. But anyway, there were 23 Nazi criminals tried. A bunch of them were given life. 11 of them were scheduled to be hanged. Not electric chair, not gas chamber, not lethal injection, hung. Goering killed himself before he could be hung. So 10 Nazis were hung. And the last one to be hung was this guy named Julius Streicher, who was this fanatical Nazi anti-Semite. And it was 1946. The sentence was supposed to be carried out in March of 46. March, Purim. But they did some appeals and stuff, and the sentence wasn't carried out to the fall. So when they were putting this guy Streicher up on the gallows, he was totally without remorse, totally unrepentant. And just as they were about to hang him, he said, "This is Purim Fest 1946. And then they hung him. How chilling is that? And the way the Hebrew names are arranged, certain letters that are listed, you know, a Hebrew letter has numerical value too. It comes out through a series of calculations to be 1946. It comes out of these guys' names. So how weird is that? So that's Esther.